Dorian was again in the helicopter. For the first time, it all made sense. The pieces fit together. The entire picture was clear. The portal in Germany? It led to the ship. To Ares. Brilliant. Kate. She had the Atlantean scientists' memories. She could unlock the ship and free Ares. Together, Ares and Dorian could complete their work on Earth and transport their army to the final war. Victory would come soon after. Dorian stared at Kate. She sat across from him, her eyes closed. Ares' words echoed in Dorian's mind.
She's the key to everything. At some point very soon, she will acquire a piece of information, a code. That code is the key to freeing me. You must capture her after she has the code and bring her to me.
Dorian marveled at Ares' genius. The realization, the full appreciation of the Atlantean's plan struck him. He felt awe. Dorian finally felt as though he had an equal. No, a superior. But Ares was something more. Dorian knew it now. Ares had designed the entire process, partly for him, for Dorian's own growth. The charade in Antarctica, this challenge to find Kate, it was as though Ares was mentoring Dorian. But it was even more than that. Ares was more than a mentor to him. Dorian had a part of Ares inside of him, his memories and more, his desires, his unrealized dreams. A father. That was the most apt term. That's what Ares was to him. And they would be together again soon. Dorian tried to imagine their reunion, what he would say, what Ares would say. And after? What else did Ares have left to teach him? What would Dorian learn about himself? He knew it now. That was his true desire, to finally unravel the greatest mystery of all, how he had come to be what he was. Ares and the answers waited beyond the portal. They would reach it soon. CDC, Atlanta, Georgia. Paul Brenner walked to his nephew's bedside.
How do you feel?
The boy looked up at him. He started to speak. But no words came. What was happening to the boy? Paul checked his vitals. All normal. Physically, the boy had made a miraculous recovery. Paul rubbed his temples. What was happening to him? He couldn't think straight. Paul's mind seemed to be in a fog, a cloud of confusion that he couldn't escape. David tried to wrap his mind around Janus's words.
You're taking us back to the Stone Ages? You're devolving us?
I'm making you safe. Have you not understood a word I've said? An enemy of unimaginable strength is hunting my people. You have some of us inside of you. Regression, devolution, is the only chance you have. It will save your species.
Assuming we're even the same species. Look, we're not going back. I don't accept this.
I respect that, Mr. Vale. Indeed, that's why I chose you. You fight for your own kind. You sacrifice for them. You follow the human code. But it betrays you in this moment. You just heard the history of your world and your species. Those primates that came down from the trees and sought sustenance on the savannas, they were survivors. Ask the chimpanzees and gorillas how they feel about their choice to remain in the trees. It was easier there, but those who ventured out, who chose the hard road, actually grew stronger, adapted and evolved, the few who survived. The tribes that marched to the sea during Toba, they were survivors too. That is the defining trait of your species. And that is how you will survive this trial.
Janus jerked his head toward the tunnel.
The cube is through.
David grabbed a lantern.
This conversation isn't over.
It has been for a very long time, Mr. Vale.
David had led Janus and Milo out of the tunnel toward the rays of sunlight that cut across the tunnel opening. The glowing yellow cube hovered just beyond the newly carved entrance. David crossed the threshold first. He swept the room with his assault rifle. Nothing moved. In the corner, a pool of blood spread out. David crept toward it, fearing what he would see.
No!
Kamau. Knife wound to the chest. David pressed his fingers to his friend's neck. He felt the cold skin before the lack of a pulse. Still, he held it there, waiting, refusing to believe it. Genas and Milo both stared at the scene. Apparently, neither knew what to say. Finally, David rose and walked over to Kate's computer. He closed it and stuffed it and the other equipment in the backpack.
Let's move out.
In the square outside the building, they found their helicopter was gone.
Okay, Janus, what's the plan? We can't beat them to Germany. They're too far ahead of us.
There is an alternative if we can get there in time.
The Knights have a plane. Can you fly it, Mr. David?
I can fly anything.
Landing had sometimes been an issue, but he didn't mention that. There was no need to worry them. Dorian watched the sea below turn to land. Italy. Soon they would cross into Germany, and they would reach the portal shortly after. The plague had crushed continental Europe. NATO had folded early, offering their resources to the humanitarian effort. Nothing could stop Dorian now. Kate opened her eyes. Dorian stared at her. She didn't blink now. She wasn't scared of him anymore. She knew who he was, and she knew who she was. History wouldn't repeat itself.
Everything okay, Kate?
I'm good.
A half hour later, after the helicopter had touched down, Dorian dragged her out onto the ground. Parked Humvees circled the portal, which glistened, giving off wisps of white light into the cold, silent night. They passed the Humvees, and Kate saw the dead soldiers lying on the ground. Plague victims. The German government must have dispatched troops to investigate the portal, but they had fallen sick. Those who hadn't died must have fled. Dorian dragged her toward the glowing portal. He called behind him to Shaw.
Stay with me. It closes behind us.
As Shaw pulled up even with them, the three of them crossed the threshold, and they were standing in a different place. To Kate, it felt like the corridors in the tombs in Antarctica, but the hallways here were more narrow. She knew this place. It was her ship, the deep space transport that had brought her and Janus here. Kate tried to take a breath, but she found that she couldn't inhale fully. Dorian's eyes flashed on her, but before he could say anything, air began rushing into the space. Did the ship recognize Kate? Was it coming back to life for her? Yes, that was it. Dorian tugged at her arm, yanking her down the dimly lit hallway. He paused at an intersection. He seemed to be trying to remember where he was going, or had gone.
This way!
The soft beads of light from the floor and ceiling seemed to grow brighter. No, Kate realized. She was just getting used to the darkness. Another change was gradually setting in. She was adjusting. The last memory, her death in Antarctica at Ares or Dorian's hands, had changed her. Kate had always had trouble relating to others. She never fully got people. She desperately wanted to have fulfilling personal relationships, but it never happened naturally for her. It had always been work. She had assumed that this personal desire had drawn her to autism research, to seek a cure for people who lack the brain wiring for understanding social cues and managing language. She now knew her motivation was much deeper than that. Dorian had been right. She wasn't great at reading people. She was easily misled. But now the game was strategy, and she knew the history, she knew the players, and she knew how it would unfold. She was smarter than Dorian was, and she would win. Outside Theuta. David's landing had been bumpy at best, but it didn't evoke a reaction from either of his passengers. They were on the ground and they were alive, and so was Kate, as far as he knew. One step at a time. As they exited the aircraft, David spotted a convoy approaching the airfield. He subconsciously tightened his grip on his assault rifle. The door of the lead Humvee swung open.
Hello.
The Amazighan chief sauntered over, the same one who had branded him days earlier and helped him take the base. A smile spread across her face.
I thought perhaps that I would never see you again.
Likewise.
Have you returned to resume your command?
Nope, just passing through. I need a jeep.
15 minutes later, David was driving recklessly toward the hills where he'd emerged days earlier when he'd left the Atlantean ship wearing an Amari uniform.
I don't know where the entrance is. I'll direct you.
They drove on for what felt like an eternity to David. The slope grew steeper and the rocky terrain more treacherous. With each passing second, he imagined his chances of rescuing Kate slipping away. Finally, Janus tapped his shoulder.
Stop here!
David pulled up next to a steep rock face. Janus bounded out, striding purposefully ahead. David and Milo tried to keep up.
What's the plan, Janus?
Janus had refused to share any real details of his plan on the plane ride, and that made David nervous.
We'll get to that.
Janus bounded ahead and turned a corner, and when David cleared the turn, the scientist was gone.
Shit!
David spun around, searching. The rock face of the mountain to his left looked like the one he had emerged from, but David wasn't sure.
Hey!
The rock face felt solid. Milo merely stood there, as if he were waiting in line for something.
Janus! Damn it! This was his plan all along, the son of a...
Janus emerged right out of the solid rock, and as he did so, the projection of the rock face dissolved behind him.
I had to disable the force field. Follow me.
Oh. Well, you could have...
David shook his head and fell in behind Janus, who led them down the tunnel the cube had carved, the path David had followed out. They took the same elevator David had used. During David's time here, all the doors had been locked. Now they opened as the three men approached. Janus led them into a room with four doors.
What now?
Now we wait. If I'm right, Kate will know what to do. She will not only release the tube that holds Ares, but she will also open the entire ship. That will be our opening. It will be a very, very short window to do what we have to do.
Janus related the rest of his plan, and David merely nodded. He was out of his element. He had no choice but to trust Janus. David turned to Milo and held out his sidearm for him to take. Milo eyed it, then shook his head.
Milo, if anyone besides us comes through that door, you have to shoot them.
I cannot, Mr. David.
You have to.
I know I must do it to survive, but it is not in me. I know if the time comes, I cannot pull the trigger. I cannot take another life. On my journey to the Ark in Malta, I learned many things. The most important thing I learned is who I truly am. I am sorry to disappoint you, Mr. David, but I also cannot lie to you. And I will not pretend to be something I am not.
David nodded.
Believe me, I'm not disappointed, Milo. And I hope the world never gives you time or reason to change.
For a brief moment, David thought about himself in his grad school days, before that building had buried him and started him on his own journey of vengeance. Janus walked to the wall. A panel opened. He took out another yellow cube and began working his fingers in the light that emerged around it. He returned to Milo and handed him the cube.
This is a cube similar to the one I used in the catacombs under Malta. It will not take a life, but it will incapacitate everyone within reach. You as well, Milo. It won't work on Atlanteans, obviously, but perhaps it will give you some time. Time for an ally to arrive.
Got any more high-tech weapons?
Nothing of use. Just follow the plan and follow my cube.
Janus moved closer to the portal door and held the cube up, ready to release it.
I want a cure for the plague before we go through.
I told you, Mr. Vale, that discussion is finished. You and Kate share the pure form of the Atlantis gene. You will both survive as you are.
Unacceptable.
Your acceptance is not required.
Dorian had brought Kate to a stop before a set of double doors. He worked the panel, and the doors parted. Seven tubes stood in the room. The middle one held Ares. His eyes followed them, cold and unblinking. Dorian stared at him for a long moment. Sloane addressed Kate without turning to face her.
Release him.
She held her bound hands up and wiggled her fingers.
Release me first.
You can manage.
I can't.
She motioned to the panel.
It's impossible to work the system with my hands bound. Untie me and I'll let him out.
He stared at her.
What's the matter? You think both of you can't handle me? Or all three of you can't?
Dorian nodded to Shaw, who took the assault knife out and snapped the zip tie in half. Kate walked to the control panel. She felt Ares' eyes following her. Her next move would determine her fate and that of many others. The memories were clearer now, and the most vivid ones were of people more than places. They had studied 100 worlds over thousands of years. He had stayed the same. Somewhere along the way, she had changed. She had grown a bit more compassionate, more reflective, and more driven. And she longed to be with someone more like herself, someone with intellect and passion. However, one thing about Janus stuck out in her mind above all else. He was the smartest person she had ever known. She was counting on that. The opening she was about to create would leave no margin for error. She manipulated the cloud of blue light that rose from the panel. Around her, lights snapped on, and the other control panels flickered to life. The tube opened, and Ares stepped out.
Well done, Dorian. No, David!
The portal door opened, and Janus rushed through, David close on his heels. Janus flung the cube into the hallway, and it raced away, a yellow wake of light marking its path. David chased after the cube. The cube would find Kate, and David would lead her back to the portal. Janus had promised David that he would take care of the ship. He couldn't allow it to fall into Dorian's or Ares' hands. As soon as Ares stepped out of the tube, to everyone's surprise, Kate's fist landed square on Dorian's jaw. She fell on top of him, ready to land another blow, but she felt Shaw's hands grip her, pulling her back.
Easy, girl.
But her distraction had succeeded. Had she bought enough time? The answer came in a blinding yellow-white light that erupted throughout the room. Shaw fell to the floor beside Kate and Dorian, writhing in agony. Kate was on her feet and out the door, but hands grabbed her. She tried to break free, but the strong hands spun her around.
David!
Come on!
Oh! Dorian's ears rang, and he saw spots. Someone jerked him up. The panel on the opposite wall was exploding. What was happening? He felt the ship shudder.
Focus, Dorian! Janus is activating the self-destruct. We have to move!
Ares pulled Dorian toward the door. Out of the corner of his eye, Dorian saw Shaw lying there, unconscious but breathing. Dorian gripped the doorframe.
Adam!
Ares pulled him away.
We have to leave him. Don't be a fool, Dorian.
He dragged Sloane down the corridor. Another blast threw them to the ground.
Adam!
Dorian started back toward the room where Shaw was. Ares grabbed his shoulders and pinned Sloane to the wall.
I won't leave you. If you won't leave him, you'll kill us both and everyone down below. Choose, Dorian.
Dorian shook his head. His brother, his only family. He couldn't make that call. The hands shook his shoulders, slamming him into the wall again.
Choose!
Dorian felt himself turn away from Shaw. Away from the only person in the world he truly cared about. Then he and Ares were running. Another blast. They would never make it. Janus keyed the final sequences into the ship and stepped back, watching the display show the ship's sections explode and decompress. The massive ship would soon be a burned-out wreck. But she would be safe. That was all that mattered. The only reason he had come here, or to any of the other hundreds of worlds. Death would come soon for him. He had finally done it, given his life to save her. Something he had willed himself to do every day for 13,000 years in that chamber under the Bay of Gibraltar. It was so easy now, so simple. Janus knew why. He would never awaken, never resurrect. He wouldn't wake up to remember his death, would never confront the same kind of endless agony the people in Ares' resurrection vessel endured. He would die, knowing he had saved the only person he had ever cared about. In that moment, he understood the stories of Kate's father, his sacrifice in Gibraltar, and Martin. Maybe subspecies 8472 had come further than he had estimated. Even so, it wouldn't matter soon. Genus steadied himself as the bridge shuddered beneath him.
How long do I have left?
Perhaps there was time to correct one last mistake. He activated the ship's deep space communications array and stood as straight as he could.
My name is Dr. Arthur Janus. I am a scientist and a citizen of a long since fallen civilization.
The room held three portals. Ares worked the cloud of light from the panel. Dorian felt numb, paralyzed. Ares pulled him through the portal, just as the blast broke through the walls. He and Ares were in the room Dorian had seen before, the one with seven doors. When Ares had caught his breath, he rose.
Now you see, Dorian. They make you weak. They pull at your heart, hold you down. They try to keep you from doing what must be done to survive.
Mechanically, Dorian followed. It was as if he were looking at himself from the outside. There was no feeling now, no reaction. Ares had led Sloane to the vast chamber that held the endless rows of tubes.
Now you're ready, Dorian. We will save them. These are your people now.
Kate flew through the archway of the portal a second before David landed beside her. The portal closed behind them. Milo was at her side.
Are you all right, Dr. Kate?
I'm fine, Milo. Thank you.
She raced to the panel beside the portal doors. The connection to the ship was closed. It had been destroyed. Janus had done well. The moment she had seen David alone, she'd known what their plan was. Janus had been brave. Seeing David had confirmed that the fire, that little piece of herself, that small flame she had fanned, was still there, and she had to move quickly to keep it alive. She brought up a schematic of the ship, or rather the section they were confined to. There was a medical bay, one of their labs. She could do it. She began programming the procedure, a gene therapy that would reverse the resurrection process that was rewiring her brain. She would lose the Atlantean memories, but she would be herself again. David stared at the portal door for a long moment.
Janus should be here.
She's not coming.
She almost had the solution. The lab wasn't far away, a few levels.
He gave us a false cure. Hey!
David took her by the arm. He held up a backpack.
The therapy gave continuity rolls everything back. It's gonna be Flintstones reruns out there soon.
He stared at her.
I brought your computer. Can you fix this?
Yes, but I don't have time to fix myself if I do.
Fix?
He searched her face.
I don't understand.
The resurrection. The memories. I'm slipping away. In a few minutes, the final stages of the resurrection process will be complete. I will cease to be me.
David let the backpack fall to his side.
What do you want to do?
I know what I want, and that's you. But I know you, the woman I love. And I know what choice you would want to make. The sacrifice. I know what you reminded me of a few days ago, below decks on a yacht in the Mediterranean. You reminded me of who I really was. And now I'm reminding you of who you are. I owe you that much, no matter what I want.
Kate studied him. She saw the memory in her mind's eye. His irrational bloodlust, her bringing him back, reminding him of the stakes. It was the same here, except she was all too rational, too clinical. She knew what she wanted, and she knew the stakes. But if she saved herself, if she erased the memories, she would leave this structure and return to a primitive world, populated by people she had refused to save. Countless deaths would be on her conscience. She would be the same as the people in those tubes in Antarctica, never able to be happy again, always haunted by something from the past. She would never escape this moment, this decision. The choice was simple, her or them. Save the people suffering from the false cure Janus had submitted to continuity, or save herself. But it wasn't that simple at all. If she chose herself, she would never be the same. But if she chose them, she might lose that last bit of herself. The last piece that held on to the person she was had become. In that moment, she finally understood Martin. All the hard choices he had made, the sacrifices, the sort of burden he had borne for all those years, and why he had tried so desperately to keep her far away from this world. She felt herself take the backpack and pull the computer out. She brought up the continuity program. She saw it, what Janus had done. He was very clever. He had been looking for the pure form of the Atlantis gene the entire time. The section of the ship with their research database had been completely destroyed, and their space vessel had been locked down, making the database there inaccessible. Finding the body of the Alpha had been his only choice.
It's amazing.
In the genome maps, she could see all the endogenous retroviruses now, those she and Janus had administered, as well as the remnants of the changes she had helped Ares Dorian with. It was as though she was working on a puzzle she couldn't solve as a child, but had returned to as an adult, with the knowledge and mental ability to finally complete it. Martin had been correct. The interventions in the Middle Ages had caused changes to the genome with radical repercussions. And those changes had compromised the rollback therapy Janus had tried to unleash with the bell. In her mind, for the first time she could grasp all the changes, see them like little glowing lights in a pile of rubble. She could pick them out now, line them up, and form different patterns with different outcomes. She worked the computer, running scenarios. The Symphony database, the collection of billions of sequenced genomes that had been collected in orchid districts around the world, was the last piece. It was a shame that the world had to come to the brink of annihilation for such an incredible feat to occur. The true challenge was that Kate had to stabilize all the genetic changes, both those she and Janus had made, as well as Ares' interventions. In essence, she was creating a therapy that would synchronize everyone, the dying, the devolving, and the rapidly evolving, creating a unified, stable genome. An Atlantean human hybrid genome. After almost half an hour of work, the screen flashed a message. One target therapy identified. Kate examined it.
Yes, it will work.
She should have felt euphoria, pride, or even relief. This was the moment she had worked for her entire life, both Atlantean and human. She had finally created a therapy that would complete her life's work, a genetic therapy that would save the human race and fix all the past mistakes. It had felt as though she had simply completed a science experiment, arrived at a conclusion she had suspected, hypothesized, anticipated her entire life. Where joy should have been, there was a cold clinical interest in the outcome. Perhaps the Atlanteans didn't feel joy in the same way. Maybe joy was so 4 million years ago for them. That would be her next task, fixing herself, getting back to who she was before. She wondered what sort of chance that experiment had. She grabbed the sat phone from the backpack.
We need to get above ground.
On the hillside, she briefly looked down at Theota. Dead horses and people lay across the black charred expanse that led to the massive wall. Beyond the wall, the ground was stained red from the carnage David had unleashed. The last remnants of the plague barge floated in the water outside the harbor, slowly drifting toward the shore. Yes, she had made the right decision, even if it meant that she was giving up the last piece of herself. She was sure of it now. Kate plugged the sat phone into the computer and sent the results to continuity. When the data had uploaded, she disconnected the phone and dialed Paul Brenner. He answered quickly, but sounded distracted, unfocused. Kate had to repeat things several times. She realized what had happened. Paul had administered Janus's false cure there, on his own cohort. Continuity was now ground zero for the radiation from Janus's regression therapy, and it had infected Paul. But Kate couldn't do anything to help him. She could only hope he found her results and could remember what to do. She ended the call. Only time would tell now. Dorian walked into the dark cavern.
Now what?
Now we fight.
Ares didn't take his eyes off the miles of glass tubes.
We have no ship.
True. We can't take the fight to them, but we can bring them to us. There's a very good reason I buried this vessel here in Antarctica, Dorian.
CDC, Atlanta, Georgia. Paul Brenner steadied himself against the wall. It was so hard to concentrate. Where was everyone? The halls were empty. The offices were empty. They were hiding from him.
I have to find them. No.
He had to do something else. She had sent him something. The pretty one, in the movies. A set of glass doors slid open. The screens inside blinked. One result.
Result of what?
A trial. He was the head of it. Trial for what? A cure. For the plague.
I'm infected. With a cure. No, that can't be right. How can I be infected with a cure?
Something was wrong. He surveyed the room. Empty. Coffee cups all over the floor. Stained papers on the table and chairs. Paul pulled a keyboard closer. A flash of clarity seized him.
One result.
He typed until his fingers ached. The letters on the screen changed.
Transmitting new therapy to all Orchid districts.
You're listening to the BBC, the voice of human triumph, on this, the first day after the Atlantis plague. The BBC has learned that the initial reports of disorientation and brain fog associated with the cure for the Atlantis plague were only temporary side effects of the cure. Orchid districts across the world now report a 100% cure rate, with no need for further orchid treatments. World leaders hailed the breakthrough, citing their historical investments in medical research and steadfast commitment to staying the course in these dark times. In related news, sources within the intelligence community have reported that citizens of nations managed by Imari International have been ordered to evacuate coastal areas. The populations of entire regions in South Africa, Chile, and Argentina are heading into their mountainous regions with only food and water. Dr. Philip Mornau of the think tank Western Tomorrow had this to say.
They've lost. They bet on the plague running its course, on the ruin of humanity, and we've come through it like we always have. It's fitting. They're literally heading for the hills.
More cautious observers have speculated that the Imari move might be part of a larger pattern, possibly the beginning of a counter-offensive. We will update this report as details emerge.
As Paul Brenner trudged through the hallways of continuity, he felt as though he were recovering from a severe head cold. But he could think now, and he knew what he had to do. He dreaded it, dreaded the answer. As he passed the sliding glass doors that led to the operations room, he noticed a young female analyst sitting inside, alone, staring at the screen. The tables were still arranged haphazardly, and coffee cups and crumpled papers littered the scene. Paul stepped toward the doors. When they parted, the analyst looked back at him, her eyes a mixture of surprise and hope, or relief. It caught Paul, mildly off guard.
You can go home now.
She stood.
I know. I didn't think I should be alone.
Paul nodded.
The others?
Must have left. Some are still here.
In the morgue. Paul completed her sentence in his mind. He walked over and turned the large screen off.
Come on. There's nobody at my house either.
They walked together out of the ops room, and Paul asked her to wait outside his nephew's room. He pushed the door open and braced himself for what he might see.
Uncle Paul!
His nephew was bright-eyed, but when he tried to push up, his muscles failed him.
No.
And he collapsed back onto the bed. Paul put a hand on the boy's shoulder.
Whoa, take it easy, kiddo.
The boy smiled at him.
You fixed me up, didn't you?
No. There was another doctor. She's much smarter than I am. I was just the delivery man.
Where's Mom?
Paul leaned forward and scooped the small boy into his arms.
Just rest now.
Where are we going?
We're going home.
Paul would wait until the boy was stronger to tell him. Until they both were stronger. Kate had long since closed the laptop and moved to the end of the rock cliff. David was there behind her, waiting silently. He seemed to sense that she needed some space, but he still wouldn't let her out of his sight. Together, from the mountaintop, they watched the sun sink beyond the Atlantic. Its last rays slid down the mountain, casting a long shadow on the bloody scene at Theota. Across the straits, she knew the same thing was happening in Gibraltar, with the Rock of Gibraltar casting the shadows there. When the night arrived, without turning to David, Kate finally spoke.
What happens now? To us?
Nothing changes.
I've changed. I'm not the same person.
What you just did confirmed to me who you are. We're going to be just fine. I can wait.
He walked to the edge of the rock cliff so that he could look into her eyes.
I never give up on anyone I love.
As his words were spoken, Kate realized that the most important part of her was still there. She wasn't entirely herself, but there was some piece of the old Kate there. Something to start from. David tried to read her expression.
What? Too much?
She took his hand.
No. I liked it. Come on, let's go see what Milo's doing.
They headed toward the entrance to the tunnel.
I think you're right. We're going to be just fine.
Arecibo Observatory, Arecibo, Puerto Rico. Dr. Mary Caldwell moved the mouse back and forth to wake up the computer. The screen came to life and began displaying the data collected overnight. The radio telescope outside her window was 1,000 feet in diameter, the largest single-aperture telescope in the world. It was sunk into the ground, looking almost like a smooth gray plate that sat on a high plateau, overlooking the green forested mountains beyond. The first rays of sunlight were peeking over the mountains, into the dish. Mary never missed watching the scene, but it wasn't the same now. Mostly because of the people they had lost. Before the plague, there had been 12 researchers manning the observatory. Now there were 3. Arecibo had been losing staff for years due to budget cuts. The plague had gotten the rest. But Mary returned for her shift each day, as she had done for the previous 6 years. She had nowhere else to go, and there was nowhere else she wanted to be. She knew the U.S. government would get around to withdrawing their power allocation any day now, but she had decided to stay to the end, until the last lights went out. Then she would venture out into the world to see what sort of work there was for an astronomer. She would have killed for a cup of coffee, but it had run out weeks ago. She focused on the computer. There was something. She clicked one of the data feeds. Mary's throat went dry. She ran an analysis.
Damn.
She ran another. Both confirmed that the signal was organized, not random cosmic background radiation. It was a message. No, it was more than that. It was the moment she had waited for her entire life. She glanced at the phone. In her mind, she had rehearsed this scene for the last 20 years, since she had first dreamed of becoming an astronomer. Her first instinct was to call the National Science Foundation, but she had called them once a week since the outbreak and got no answer. She had also called SRI International with the same results. Who to call? The White House? Who would believe her? She needed help, someone to analyze the transmission. The SETI Institute in Mountain View, California? She hadn't tried them. She'd had no reason to.
Maybe.
John Bishop, another scientist on the project, stumbled into the office. He was usually only sober for about an hour after he woke up.
John, I found something.
Please
tell me it's more coffee.
It's not coffee.
The Origin Mystery, Book 2, The Atlantis Plague by A.G. Riddle, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2013, A.G. Riddle. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with the author. Production copyright 2024, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Richard Rowan, with performances by Jonathan David Bullock as David Vale, Stephanie Namet Parker as Kate Warner, Joel David Santner as Dorian Sloan, Andy Brownstein as Dr. Janus, Henry W. Kramer as Adam Shaw, Rainer Gabriel as Paul Brenner, Zeke Alton as Kamau, Danny Montooth as Ares, David Kwee-Kwee as Dr. Shun Chang, and Joe Mallon as Major Rukin. Also with Ryan Dallasung, Kimberly Gilbert, Chris Davenport, Andy Clements, Jacob Yeh, Rob Morera, RJ Bailey, James J. Johnson, Matthew Pauly, Morgan Dallabetta, Crystal Lee, Yasmin Twazon, Christopher Williams, Nora Ashradi, and Bradley Foster Smith. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Richard Rowan. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Quinn Lambert and Justin Wirtz. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. The Origin Mystery Trilogy will continue with Book 3, The Atlantis World. If you've enjoyed The Origin Mystery, you might also enjoy Druden by Scott Sigler and Adrian Picardi. All these titles and many more are now available in Graphic Audio. Keep listening for a preview of another epic title in Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents Druden by Scott Sigler and Adrian Picardi. November 1944, in the Hürtgen Forest of Germany. In the waning months of World War II, a depleted but resilient U.S. platoon is tasked with locating a secret Nazi research facility. With all the enemy soldiers and staff seemingly missing, and more questions than answers, the platoon follows their trusted lieutenant, who in turn is being led by a shady OSS operative. But when night falls, they discover what the project actually created. Rudolf glanced down through the glass to the pit, then back to his wife.
Hell is empty, once the devils are all here.
He put his goggles back on and took his wife's free left hand. Henrietta flipped the switch. And the lights went out. Nothing passed the protective glass but blackness and the terrified breathing of the prisoner. Then, a clicking sound.
Harris, any word from the Graves Registration Unit?
Yes, sir. They're busy. The entire battalion got hit pretty hard last night.
Potts looked around and realized Rabinowitz was still in the foxhole.
Rabbi, get your ass over here.
Rabinowitz pretended not to hear and stared straight ahead.
Rabbi, if you don't get up,
It's okay, Sergeant. Leave him be.
Second platoon is assigned to Captain Weiner until he finds what he's looking for.
Or doesn't find. Herr Alfred might be lying, just to save his own family. We'll know soon enough. The location is only a few hours away.
Midbury stood, looked to Eric, and canted his head toward the map on the table.
Reconnaissance says the German divisions are here and here. Our 8th and 9th are in pursuit, supporting the advancing 3rd. We're moving out, ASAP.
Without us, sir?
My orders are to help Weiner. You're that help. And besides, after today, You boys earned an easy assignment.
Oh, what if there's a camp garrison?
Alfred says he's been there 24 times, never seen guards.
The colonel offered Eric a nod of assurance.
The Germans have pulled out for miles around. They've abandoned towns, bases, everything. Second platoon should be able to handle it. If you see something you can't handle, get out of there.
Eric now saw Harris on his back. Dead eyes, staring out, his face turned partway to Eric, his guts torn out and strewn across the forest floor. Suddenly, Wilson is grabbed by two men and goes down. Potts and Eric kick at the men attacking Wilson, knocking them off, then shoot them point blank multiple times. Both men were dressed in civilian clothes. From behind Eric, a man rushes in. Eric turned, but the man closed the distance with freakish speed. The men fell face down to reveal Rabinowitz and Lifter at the edge of the woods.
Come on!
Eric and Potts slung their rifles through their 1911 sidearms, then grabbed Wilson off the ground and carried him out of the woods.
Lifter! Let him have it! Fall back!
Druden, by Scott Sigler and Adrian Picardi.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.